This is Africa News Tonight on the Voice of America.
Good evening and welcome. Welcome to Africa News Tonight from the English to Africa service of the Voice of America, your source for Pan-African news and world developments. I'm Yehi Suhib in Washington. Coming up on Africa News Tonight...
I think the problem with these kind of calls for action is that they have been going on for many years, really, outside actors calling for things in Libya, but without any, whether it's sanctions, punitive action, or even something they can use to convince the Libyan actors to agree to these kind of new political process, it's difficult to see how that will happen.
That's Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, on the prospects that promises made at the Berlin Conference on Libya will become a reality. Details coming up also. British Prime Minister Boris Johnson pledges a fairer migration system for Africans at an investment summit for African leaders in London. And five terror suspects have been arrested in Kenya's capital, Nairobi. We'll have these stories and more ahead on Africa News Tonight. Our top story, Prime Minister Boris Johnson said Britain will put people before passports as he pledged a fairer migration system at an investment summit for African leaders in London yesterday. Britain wants to strike trade new deals with fast-growing economies in Africa and beyond after it officially leaves the European Union on January 31st. But as Henry Ridgewell reports, turnout for the summit suggests muted enthusiasm among many African leaders.
British Prime Minister Boris Johnson wooed African leaders gathered Monday in London with his now familiar message. Britain is going global after Brexit.
More than half the world's 15 fastest growing economies are in Africa.
Britain has some catching up to do. Annual two-way trade with Africa is around $46 billion, less than a quarter that of China, the continent's biggest trading partner. Prime Minister Johnson promised African citizens a fairer migration system with an end to free movement of EU citizens.
By putting people before passports, we will be able to attract the best talent from around the world, wherever they may be.
Johnson also pledged to end British investment in coal mining and coal-fired power plants overseas. So will Africa benefit from Brexit? Secretary General of the United Nations Conference on Trade and Development, Mukisa Kituyi, told VOA it will take time.
For a long time to come, Europe is going to be the most important trading partner of Britain. Incrementally, embracing Africa is going to be fourth or fifth stage after more urgent priorities. So for Africa, the test of success in Britain opening up in a new relationship will be seen on whether they can make a better market access offer, capacity building offer, trade facilitation offer than what Africa receives under the Economic Partnership Agreement with Brussels.
The African leaders attended a reception at Buckingham Palace Monday evening as the royal family joined the charm offensive. But do African nations embrace the vision of a global Britain? 16 African leaders attended the London summit, far fewer than the number of leaders who attended similar recent events in Japan, Russia and China. The UN's Mukisa Kituyi says the world must respect Britain's democratic choice, but he says its presence will be missed in the EU.
Britain has been a voice of consensus building. It has been a voice of responsible engagement. That voice taken off the table leaves Brussels a poorer place. Secondly, I believe that the burden of transition is going to be higher in cost than the benefits of Brexit.
Britain has made its ambitions clear to strike out beyond Europe after Brexit, but by far the majority of economic forecasts, including the government's own analysis, show that leaving the world's biggest free trading bloc will likely slow Britain's economy for several years. Henry Ridgewell for VOA News, London.
The latest meeting to seek a solution to Libya's conflict has covered much of the same ground: the need for an effective arms embargo and more pressure on the countries who are supporting one side or the other. German Chancellor Angela Merkel, the Berlin summit host, said at the conclusion that a military solution to the largely stalemated battle for Tripoli seems increasingly unlikely and will only cause more suffering. She said the arms embargo needs to be more strictly controlled. UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said that with different countries backing different sides in Libya, there has been growing concern that the country will become another Syria. VOA senior analyst Mohamed El-Shenawi spoke with Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, about what the Berlin conference achieved and whether the UN weapons embargo would be strictly applied.
The conference succeeded in bringing together the majority of the leaders from the main countries involved in Libya, which was a success in itself. The conference resulted in a 57-point communique, so actually a very long statement outlining a number of key points that the different participants agreed to, related to the political process, economic reform, as well as various commitments to enforcing UN arms embargo and the ceasefire. They also agreed to a number of follow-on mechanisms, so a series of high-level meetings to take place on a monthly basis going forward, as well as the two Libyan parties, so Khalifa Haftar on one side and Fayez al-Sarraj on the other, to nominate 5 military officials each to participate in a kind of ceasefire negotiations to try and agree to the terms of a ceasefire.
So what was missing in the Berlin conference on Libya?
The main things that were missing, so although there were lots of nice words and lots of commitments to various things, there was actually very little, unfortunately, in the way of real mechanisms or real implementable action. So although they reiterated support for the UN arms embargo, there was no mention of the countries that have already violated the arms embargo, no indication of how they're going to change the current setup to actually implement some of the sanctions. Again, although they talked about mechanisms for monitoring the ceasefire through the UN Security Council, there at the moment is no ceasefire agreement, and there's no real clear indication from the meeting and from the statement how the internationals can leverage or pressure the Libyan actors themselves to actually agree to a ceasefire. They haven't really changed their position or their conditions on that. So, yeah, I think that the main things that were missing were actual implementable actions, and I think there's a real danger that there'll be nice words coming out of this conference, but very little change on the ground.
UN Secretary General Antonio Guterres said with different countries backing different sides in Libya, there has been growing concern that Libya will become another Syria. Would Egypt, the United Arab Emirates, Russia and Turkey stop their military and intelligence backing for the two warring sides?
Now, although all of those countries you mentioned were at the Berlin conference and in theory have committed to not interfering in Libya, at the same time as the conference was going on, we've seen Turkey increasing the number of Syrian fighters it's deployed to the country, as well as other equipment. On the UAE side, we've also seen an influx of various equipment to the LNA from there. So it's difficult to really see how genuinely committed these countries are to changing their actions in the country. I think one of the key elements is that there are, particularly between the likes of Turkey on one side and the UAE and Saudi on the other, some really strong ideological differences, that it's difficult to see if one side is active in the country, the other will want to maintain a defensive capacity to prevent their rivals from increasing their influence in the country.
U.S. Secretary of State Mike Pompeo urged the Libyan sides to seize the opportunity to use the UN-led mediation and decide on a future for themselves that's free from violence fueled by outside parties. Would that call work?
I think the problem with these kind of calls for action is that they have been going on for many years, really, with outside actors calling for things in Libya, but without any, whether it's sanctions, punitive action, or even something they can use to convince the Libyan actors to agree to these kind of a new political process, it's difficult to see how that will happen. Now, with the US, it is one of the key players that does have some amount of influence on both sides in the country. And if it were to decide to really, you know, bring its influence to bear, the US could have some influence. It could perhaps force a ceasefire and really take things in the right direction. Unfortunately, although the US Secretary of State did attend the Berlin process, the US has largely been not very active in Libya recently, and it hasn't really shown any indications of being willing to really take on that front role in the country at present.
That was Rhiannon Smith, managing editor of the London-based Libya Analysis, speaking with VOA senior analyst Mohammed El-Shenawi. A Kenyan court has allowed security agencies to hold five terror suspects arrested Saturday for allegedly casing a bar in Nairobi. The five include three Somali nationals, a U.S. citizen, and their Kenyan driver. Mohammed Yusuf reports.
Five suspects, one American, three Somali nationals, and their Kenyan driver, are awaiting their second appearance in a Kenyan court after they were arrested for what authorities say is surveying an entertainment establishment in Nairobi. The five, Mohammed Abbas Mahmoud, Ifra Mohammed Abshir, Mohammed Hassan Barrio, Hodan Abdi Ismail and Mohammed Adan, made an initial court appearance Monday. Prosecutors asked for more time to conduct an investigation on the individuals. They were arrested Saturday at the Whiskey River Club in Nairobi. David Mbugua, the head of the security of the club, told VOA the suspects were present in the club.
They came around seven guys, but they got their seat in different positions. So we started worrying. Why could they sit in one seat, in one table, and share their drinks? And thereafter, I called my guys, told them, I'm sensing something not right here. And I said some guys, this is one of my three of my guys, I set them on different positions to keep an eye on what these guys are set to do. I saw one guy leaving, going behind the club, coming back forth to the seat, then going again. One time or another, this fellow was just drinking a soda.
Mbugua says he called one of the suspects to his office, and when he couldn't explain himself, he called authorities.
I gave a command, take this fellow to the chamber for interrogation. And then thereafter, we interrogated this fellow. He was telling us, I've been to USA, I've been in Kenya. He doesn't know good Kiswahili. He doesn't have good English. I started wondering, because a Kenyan will always have good Kiswahili, and an American will have very flowing English. Then I told this guy, this is the fellow we are looking for. Then I keep him in custody, and then I communicated to the security agencies, and that's it. They came for him.
Kenyan security agencies say when they took the suspects in, they found a military uniform. The U.S. citizen taken into custody claimed he had not been given an opportunity to contact an attorney. Abdinasir Adan is a human rights lawyer and has represented many terror suspects. He says the prosecution sometimes has relied on hearsay and many end up being freed.
Most of the time when these issues of terrorism surfaces is the most challenging bit is the prosecution or the government tend to struggle to link the suspect with any terrorism because what they normally rely on is rumor and they don't have sufficient evidence to link the suspect with. The number of terror suspects to be convicted of terrorism are very minimal. Most of them are released.
In July 2019, a Tanzanian and two Kenyans were found guilty for their role in the 2015 Garissa University College gun attack that killed 147 people. Kenya has witnessed a wave of terror attacks in the past month, killing more than 20 people. But Kenyan authorities have occasionally released terror suspects after interrogating them for a few weeks. The Al-Shabaab terror group targets Kenya for its troops' contribution to the African Union mission in Somalia that supports the Somali government. Mohammed Yusuf for VOA News, Nairobi.
You're listening to African News Tonight on The Voice of America. Students have protested a sharp increase in the school fees in Zimbabwe. Adigando has more on the story from Bulawayo.
pupils from Jubei High School took to the street Monday to protest against the steep increase of school fees to 440 Zimbabwean dollars from 92 Zimbabwean dollars. The students marched for 30 minutes along Luveve Road, the main access road to Bulawayo's western township suburbs. The students carried a portrait of President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and they were also carrying a Zimbabwe flag. At the school, police addressed an assembly of all the pupils, then separated those who had participated in the march.
We now have the information to address your district school's administrator. I might not have immediate solution to what. What I will do is we'll consolidate all the information that we have put down, and then I will present it to our
The ministry official said that although they had noted the pupils' grievances, the economic problems they wrote about were out of her purview.
The economic situation, that is a national issue, isn't it? Which cannot be handled by me, which cannot be handled by his followers, which might not be handled by our PhD, but what we can do, what we can attempt to immediately, we will do that. So that's my appeal to you. And then in future, if we have a problem, if there are issues, let us not start by going to the streets. Without a clearance, it makes your genuine cause something else. And if you are 17, 18 and above, that's a criminal offense.
Educators and the police required the students to record their names and ages in addition to the statements they had written down. Despite assurances by the ministry official that they would not be penalized, the students rumbled their displeasure. One of the students expressed their reason for taking part in the march and their fear of reprisal.
But now the fees has been raised to 440. And actually, we don't understand why it's raised to 440. When the issue right now of them taking our records and saying that now, like, wanting us to give information and so on. We understand that they're keeping us here, but it's not fair now that they're taking details and everything. Who knows what's going to happen next when the journalists are not here. So that's it.
The Zimbabwe Human Rights Lawyers Regional Office says it is following the case closely. One lawyer asked to speak on condition of anonymity.
What I can say is that the violation that is in there is the use of underhanded tactics to make children who are without the assistance of their guardians give a self-incriminating statement. But these children have incriminated themselves. They have said, yes, we have protested, and this is our reason. Oh, well, I think there is intimidation, of course, and there is a bit of underhandedness of the police by using the teachers to do and the education officers to basically do their job for them by collecting the names of the, by collecting basically a confession from the children.
The student protest comes even as many teachers are staying away from work. Teachers say soaring inflation has eroded their salaries so bad that they cannot afford transportation to their jobs. The Progressive Teachers Union of Zimbabwe and the Amalgamated Rural Teachers Union of Zimbabwe have rejected the government's 97% wage increase, saying it falls far short of their expectations. Reporting for VOA, this is Adigondo.
Cameroon has bowed to pressure from truckers and is dismantling illegal roadblocks and checkpoints from the country's port city of Douala to the Chadian capital, N'Djamena. For more than a week, truckers refused to drive the route because of extortion at the checkpoints. As Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from the town of Ngawandira, drivers have resumed full activity now that officials are listening to their complaints.
Cameroonian truck driver Ngaibai Basiru drives his semi-trailer carrying building material out of the Ngaoundere truck stop in northern Cameroon on his way to the Chadian capital. Ngaibai says after grounding his truck for 10 days, he and 90 other truck drivers decided to resume deliveries because authorities in Cameroon are dismantling some of the illegal checkpoints that extort money from him and his peers.
The difficulty que nous avons toujours eu à rencontrer sur ce corridor Douala-Bangui-Douala-N'Djamena.
He says what made them very angry and stopped transporting only basic goods like food and medication to N'Djamena was that they were spending up to $500 to pay their way through the many illegal checkpoints between Douala and N'Djamena, and a similar amount on their way back. Basiru said truckers were surprised that after complaining to the government several times last year, the number of checkpoints increased and the money collected from truckers skyrocketed. The truckers began their protest on January 2. I.C. Issa, vice president of Chad's National Trade Union of Truck Drivers, says Cameroon should not only dismantle the illegal check posts, but should also make sure people who create such posts are punished.
On a demandé 15 contrôles qui n'ont pas ordonné.
He says the government should make sure the police, gendarmes and customs officers who mounted the illegal checkpoints answer charges in courts of law. He says the dismantling of 15 unauthorized control posts in a distance of 70 kilometers within 12 hours indicates how truck drivers were severely exploited and that they are ready to indicate to the governor so many other illegal checkpoints where transporters are harassed to give money without receipts. Kildadi Tagioke Bukar, governor of Cameroon's Adamawa region, when Goundere is found, supervised the clearing of the checkpoints. He says some of them were created by Cameroon security services for what they described as strategic reasons, but that such reasons cannot undermine a decision taken by Cameroon and Chad to regulate transport between the two countries. In January of last year, Chad and the Central African Republic dispatched senior customs officials to Cameroon to look into the problem of the illegal checkpoints. Chad and CAR businesses threatened to start importing and exporting goods through Cotonou in Benin, although Douala is the nearest ocean gateway for the landlocked countries. In March 2019, the transport ministers of Cameroon and Chad signed an agreement recognizing only one security checkpoint on the road between Douala and N'Djamena. Cameroon's Ministry of Transport says it has reduced the number of checkpoints along the road by 75%, and officials have promised to dismantle the rest. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Ngaoundéré, Northern Cameroon.
Burundi has opened one of the 4,000 mass graves that the Truth and Reconciliation Commission told Parliament it has found, giving relatives of the missing a slim chance at closure. The grave in Bujumbura contained little more than bones and cloth, but Reuters reported that one woman cried after bystanders said she recognized the cloth and watch of her husband. Officials said the remains will be stored in body bags until they can be given a proper burial. The government-run commission was set up in 2014 to investigate violence from 1885, when foreigners arrived in Burundi, until 2008, when a stalled peace deal to end the civil war was fully implemented. It does not cover most of the rule of current President Pierre Nkurunziza. The UN says hundreds of Burundians have been killed in clashes with security forces since 2015, when Nkurunziza ran for a third disputed term. And that wraps up this edition of African News Tonight. I'm Yehiz Fuhib in Washington. Please stay tuned for the sunny side of sports coming up at 18:30 UTC. On behalf of our producer, Bill Workinger, and our engineer, Nashwan Kali, thanks for choosing The Voice of America.
sports fans, brighten your day by tuning into the sunny side of sports Monday through Friday at 1630 and 1830 UTC. Join us on Facebook at facebook.com/VOA Sunny and on Twitter at VOA Sunny Sports. Or check out the blog at blogs.voanews.com/sunny. It's the sunny side of sports right here on the Voice of America.